This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this is our episode, Cues of the Force, Quotidian of the Force. No, that's just a fun word to say. It's Questions of the Force. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok. You say Q, I am here with A's, and that's what we love doing here.
I like that you turned it into maybe like a fun chant that could be done at parties. I say Q, you say A. Q, A, Q, A. We love questions answered. We are going to get into the wonderful cues from our kind listeners, and we will hopefully provide some A's. We got a couple of A's to do right here at the top of the podcast. The first one is A is for Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Battle Scars by Sam Meggs. For our release schedule, we might have already released our discussion of Battle Scars by Sam Meggs. Right. I get confused. So if you'd like to listen to that, if you'd like to be all ready for the story in the video game Jedi Survivor, please do check this out on us. It is free to you, and it really does help us out. If you'd like to do that, you can download that free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for a free audiobook. One A down, another A to go. Go for it, Ken.
Yes, our current ask, and we've been asking, and you all have been answering, another A there, Andros, and we appreciate it. We're asking you to maybe consider checking out our Patreon page at patreon.com/ForceCenter. We have a new goal out there, and again, because of the way we record, we could have already hit it, but this is the goal. We're excited to do it, at $2,200 a month. We're going to do another ranked live stream direct to all of our Patreon supporters, and then that will go live after, of course, but it's a fun, interactive, exclusive way, if you like that word, exclusive. We are here about sharing the love at our Patreon page, but it's fun for all of you who support us. So check it out there. We have the Indiana Jones and the Perilous podcast going there, leading up to Dial of Destiny, a lot of things over there. So consider checking out patreon.com/ForceCenter. And then a bonus ask. Some of you have already done this, but we're going to continue to ask until May 17th when the survey we put out closes at 8 p.m. Pacific. But we've got a survey out there. This is very key. And I know I'm with you. Sometimes you get a survey email and you're like, no, I already shopped at Walgreens. I don't need to tell you how it was. But this is important to continuing to build, grow, and plan for the future of ForceCenter. And we really would love responses. And we've got a lot already. But we're hoping to get a total of 1,000 responses, kind of a magic number to open up the actual research that is a full test of all of our audience there. So if you want to do that, you can go to our socials. There's links there. But if you have a pen and paper handy, write this down. SurveyMonkey.com/r/VJK868. Oh, gosh. Oh, oh, did you hear me lean in? Because I try to lean in with my bad eyes these days. Here we go again. SurveyMonkey.com/r/VJK8K79. There you go. SurveyMonkey.com/r/VJK8K79. It's like request number on a radio station. There we go. Check it out. But like I said, the easiest way, if you just, when you're done laughing at me, go to our socials. You'll find a link there. It'll be fun.
Ken, in order for us to continue on this podcast and for me to not to know that you're not a robot, I'm going to show you a picture. And if you could tell me which squares have motorcycles in them, that would be great.
Please, which one have bridges? But the bridge is kind of in that. Is the corner of the bridge in that one?
Yeah. Is this not all a picture of a bridge? Like, yeah. I've failed those a couple times.
Many times indeed. So my eyes let me down. There we go. That is our asks for today.
Yeah, so we have passed through the first two A's, so now we can get to the titular A of answers. But in order to have answers, you gotta have questions. Hey, there's a philosophical question. Can you just have an answer without a question? We will not resolve that one today. Instead, we'll take these two questions from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter and Aaron Motes. Aaron says, I like both canon and legends. At Star Wars Celebration Europe, Lucasfilm announced a new Jedi Order film, a Dawn of the Jedi film, and Ahsoka says heir to the Empire in the teaser for her show. I don't expect one-to-one adaptations, but these are very specific titles for Legends fans. Why do you think they're being used? This is a really great question because obviously the Ahsoka just saying the title heir to the Empire, right. Pretty big. And then the revelation that Filoni is making a film that he described as the New Republic versus an Imperial remnant. That stuff all rings real loud, real clear. Perhaps there's going to be some Legends expanded universe ties. But Aaron bringing in these terms on the timeline, the New Jedi Order, the Dawn of the Jedi, make it even more powerful to fans of Legends. So, Ken, where do you go with this? Do you think it's beyond the heir to the Empire? Do you think it's purposeful to be using these terms that that fans might be really familiar with?
Trip me up. Now that I thought about it a little more specifically. First of all, a lot of this is happening, I think, just because Dave is a Legends fan, right? So there you go. Mm-hmm. He's with you, Aaron. And how do I say? Yeah. Heir of the Empire. Yes. Right. There's no escaping that. That was so intentional. New Jedi Order and Dawn of the Jedi. Don't forget, there was also a book called The Last Jedi. Right. And
a comic.
Right. Or maybe it was the comic and not a book. I apologize. Or maybe it's both. So I think it's there's generic enough titles that it's possible that James Mangold was like, and I'm going to call it Dawn of the Jedi. And everyone was like, yeah, that's great. And no one at the table in the negotiation went, oh, it was a novel from 1998 or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
So I don't want to, that, I don't mean that to dampen any passion for the titles that Legend fans might have. I think it works both ways, whether it's completely, yeah, no, these are just kind of gentle enough titles. What else would you call it? It's Rey starting a, you know, blank new blank Jedi Order. It's got to be new, right? But the fact that it does stoke the passions of Legends fans whose ears might perk up, I think that's an added bonus. Not unlike Rogue Squadron, right? That everyone got excited, and
mm-hmm.
The downside is then you have to kind of, maybe part of the marketing is, but not like the video game, you know, which can be its own set of problems. So that's where I start with this conversation, Aaron. I think if it gets you excited in that way, then that's how it works and that's how it should feel.
Yeah, I really agree with all of that. I think the Heir to the Empire and the culmination of the Mandoverse truly being about the New Republic era and setting up Thrawn as a bit of the big bad of the era, one would assume. I don't think he's going to be out of the count at the end of Ahsoka season one. I think if Filoni's film is the New Republic versus Imperial Remnant, I think Thrawn's going to be leading that. I could be wrong. Yeah. But so I think everything about that, Heir to the Empire, the revelation of Thrawn, I think that's a declaration of intent. We talked on our news show this week about another interview with Favreau and Filoni on the podcast Dagobah Dispatch, where Filoni was talking about, I'm paraphrasing here, that as a kid growing up, always Return of the Jedi was the end of the story, but really wondering what happened next. And then we jump forward eventually to episode 7, way far in the future. But that means there's all these other stories that have kind of been told, but maybe some of that stuff could kind of happen. I feel like there's a real continual underlining of, yes, we're going to deal with some of the Legends ideas. And that really tracks for me that ever since the new canon has been announced, there's really been a desire and I think a success of including characters and ideas. We've had Thrawn come back, Rook in Rebels as well.
Right.
The Corran Horn tease, which sounds like some weird county dance. The Corran Horn tease, but the Corran Horn. am I saying that right?
I think we'll ask Alex Damon, favorite character of all time. Yeah,
I'm Googling it right now because it sounds dirty. Nope, that's it. Corran Horn.
Corran Horn.
Corran Horn in Kenobi.
By the way, there's all some of the problems I do have with Legends. Kent Horn.
I don't know why it's striking me this way. It's on paper, it sounds like that's a cool name, but Corran Horn. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway. Corran Horn in Kenobi, Jackson in the books and comics, the old bounty hunter Vance being a big deal, the bounty hunter comics, bringing back Dirge from the Tartakovsky Clone Wars, the Dark Troopers from many sources, but I encountered them in video games being in Mandalorian. I think it's easier for us to forget now that Life Day crept its way back into canon. It is a big deal. The cheer in the theater from the hardcore Star Wars fans when Kira mentions Taris Kasi, Chewie's family names, you know, all throughout what is Legends in canon or Legends in EU. In modern canon, there's been a desire to bring it in and interpret it. And maybe this is Filoni saying, I've always loved that stuff too. I'm bringing it in. And this is now the ultimate challenge. What do you do with some of the characters that are harder to reckon with in modern canon? How do you adapt Mara Jade? So fans who've loved her are excited to see Mara Jade, but everything tracks with the Inquisitors and how Luke might feel about the idea of attachments now that that's been so fleshed out in the prequel era. Yeah. You know, what do you do with somebody like Joris Saboth? How does that character fit in with the modern ideas of which Jedi survived and all that? It, in some ways, it seems like Filoni has always, in many other creators, but Filoni in particular, has always liked to reintroduce Legends characters. And now, is he heading towards the ultimate challenge of bringing in some of the most beloved and making them work in modern canon?
Yeah, no, this is great stuff here. It reminds me, first of all, I love Aaron's question starts with, hey, I'm reading this, Aaron, in my own voice. Maybe it's not how you wrote it, but hey, I like both canon and Legends. Sorry. kind of like, we don't have to choose. And I'm one who's, you know, been a little anti-Legends at times, and I'll have to own it. And I have a reason, a specific reason for that I can reiterate that I've mentioned the podcast probably years ago. But I love what you're saying, Joseph, of it goes beyond even what I think, right? I no longer think as a Life Day as a canon adjacent holiday special thing. I just think of it as a thing in Star Wars. And that's just the magic of when you do that. And when you do it in a way that has purpose, a way that maybe has a spirit of fun. I think sometimes there's references that are fun. And I think there's sometimes you get a Kevin Scott who says, no, I'm standing up for that rabbit and giving you the why of Jackson. And it even convinces me, who's from 2014 on been like, please, no Jackson, please, please, no. And then it shows up and I read that story and I go, you know what? I like what they did with that. And it's a good reminder of you get someone, not just a Filoni, but a creator who's passionate for this, who is paying respects to that era where Heir to the Empire was the only thing on the shelf and finding the right way to do it. Your excellent point, Joseph, too, is it's not just about where we are now. It is 99. I mean, you remember that stuff in 99? And even more in Attack of the Clones, kind of a fervor, an outrage over that's not what the clones are, or that's not what Mandalorians are a little bit later on in the Clone Wars era, right?
That's not where Boba Fett came from. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A big one. Right. And so this has been a longstanding thing here, and it's easy to just kind of break it down into a binary choice, canon or Legends, you choose. And maybe I've been responsible for that as well. And I apologize for that. I got defensive. I was at a bar. This is early on in the Disney era, about 2016, 2017 range. I was at a bar with our friend, former guest of the show, Van William, great singer songwriter. And we were just eating some chicken wings and drinking beer, watching sports or something. You know. And behind us, we hear like an entire table of dudes, complaining about Disney Star Wars. And so our ears perked up as fans of Disney Star Wars. And one guy loudly, because it was a bar conversation, loudly goes, they have hundreds and hundreds of Luke Skywalker stories, and they're not even using one of them. Disney's so stupid. And I just remember thinking, I'll fight that guy. I'll fight you too. I'm going to choose a side, and it's not that side, right? And that's not necessarily right for me to base all of my Legends angst on. So I enjoy this question, Aaron. I enjoy that these titles mean stuff and means just warm, special memories to a lot of fans, myself included. 1991, Ken, would be thrilled to know that Heir to the Empire would be said on a TV show and a trailer. Oh my God, that would have been just exciting. So overall, I'm gonna support Aaron's idea here that they're being used pretty specifically and to pay homage.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it because I think in the hands of Favreau and Filoni and all these other creators, everything is coming so from a sense of celebration of it. It's all Star Wars, and yeah, you got to make some decisions to make it work. But let's get to the core of it. You know, I think for me, sometimes what I remember bumping against in the Heir to the Empire trilogy years ago when I was a literal teenager was it felt a little bit more science fiction-y and less space fantasy. I'm really looking forward to revisiting those books and seeing how I feel about it today. If that was your first exposure to Star Wars, that would not bump for you at all. This is Star Wars and it excited you. But I have such a belief that these creators can take the core of what's exciting about planets, people, ideas in Legends, celebrate the core and bring them into the Star Wars canon that can play with lots of genres, but to me always remains kind of space fantasy. And even kind of dabble with weird science fiction, but stay a little bit more in that lane. I think Thrawn is it. I know there are some people who don't like the adaptation of Thrawn, but in general, you know, we sat in a packed hall and listened to people lose their minds to see live action Thrawn.
Indeed.
To be so happy when the actor came out. Thrawn is, to me, an example of a real success story of bringing a character in, keeping the absolute core of the character, and having a lot of fans be really happy with it. Again, I'm sure there are even some people listening who are like, actually, I really don't like that. That's always going to be the way with Star Wars. But in the big picture, it's not like, you know, toilet flush noise across the fandom to the way Thrawn has been brought in. And I'm hoping for more of that. Yeah. In terms of, you know, the other names, the Dawn of the Jedi, the new Jedi Order, those are on timelines that were put on the screen by this large corporation that really does care about branding. I think there is a part of me that really agrees with you, Ken, of like, well, those are logical, exciting titles for those eras and what's happening. And would you kind of have to twist yourself in a pretzel to not call it a new Jedi Order? Rey is starting the Jedi again. Are you going to call it the fresh Jedi Bunch? It's a terrible example.
Fresh Jedi Bunch, a great soda coming straight to you from Lucasfilm.
But like, you might need to kind of twist it around to be like, well, why wouldn't we call it just what it is? And like, Dawn of the Jedi is a nice, dramatic, frankly, pulpy title. Are you going to call that, you know, Origins of the Jedi? Maybe. But so to me, there is a part of just like, well, these are good titles for it. But also it says to me, we want to invite Legends and EU fans to be engaged with modern canon. It's expanding. Nothing's going to be a direct one-to-one adaptation. But the spirit of those eras, the spirit of those stories, what might you find in this new storytelling that connects to what excited you about those stories in the past?
Yeah, it's not that they necessarily need to do this, but this could be the first time in this modern era where you might have a large group of fans finally feeling like the cap has been tipped at their direction, right?
Yeah.
I know, I understand. I think even though maybe I disagreed with a lot of it or disagree with the way it was expressed, I totally got that day in April when a lot of things were just erased. I had friends of mine, close friends of mine, being like a little gut punched by that. Mm-hmm. So if this helps in any way, the danger is still, like even said with the Thrawn thing of, well, that's still not my Thrawn. That could happen. You know, that's not my Dawn of the Jedi. Totally. But I think you have someone like Filoni who's always Clone Wars. You're so Clone Wars is just full of that kind of stuff. Of legends, tips of the cap. So it could be a good thing. All good thing, I think.
And so is Mandalorian. I mean, I think the entire journey of, well, the Mandalorians were presented as a creed. Now then Luke is like, no, actually some people live on the planet Mandalore, surrounding planets. And then that whole idea of creed comes back. That's a celebration of different perspectives and how they can work together.
Yeah, indeed. Mm.
Yeah, exciting times. Very exciting times. You know, we've often heard from Legends fans, and I'm really excited for Legends fans, and I hope they get to feel more joy from all of this. And I'm excited to finally revisit those books. Just a few things to catch on. Five or six High Republic books for me to catch up on, and then right in. All right, we're going to move on to our next question. Comes to us again from Twitter, from A. Sunil. Sunil says, Space Dads. addressing Ken and I, which I'll take it. Space Dads. Ahmed came back, so why not Jake? No one got punished by prequel hate more than him. I'd love to see it. Curious on your thoughts. Thanks, y'all. Thank you for the great question. This is, I think, an important question and a difficult question about Jake Lloyd. Ken, I know you've talked in the past about your hope for Jake Lloyd to possibly return. What are you feeling now in the wake of Ahmed Best has returned in many ways. He came back to voice Jar Jar, took a little break during the Clone Wars, came back and continued to voice Jar Jar and got some great stories in the Clone Wars and then Jedi Temple Challenge. And then this great triumph of being Kelleran Beck live action, the kind teacher who rescued Grogu. So we're really in this warm wave of Ahmed Best appreciation and celebration. Where does that leave you with Jake Lloyd?
I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. I've been trying and at times struggling to get maybe a piece of Force Center media out on YouTube addressing this, and maybe I'll still do that. The struggle has been, I want this in the worst way possible, but I think it's time. It's been time. I think he'd be so well received, but the reality is I don't know if he's in that spot because a lot of the unfortunately public struggles he's had, some of them legal and all that stuff. But if you read it more, there was some mental health issues and some stuff he's working to get out from under in his family. The last public post from his family was a good one. And I think you're right. This question is touching on, you know, it's certainly not a competition between the two of them. Who was affected more, but that's not how the question was meant. But like, you know, it was just devastating. And I think it led to a lot of things going on. So it would be one of those questions of, same with Ahmed, like, do you want to, and are you ready, and could you feel it? And I think once that's the big thing, and that's the big X factor, we just don't know. And the family of Jake Lloyd, I think, has done right by him in the last few years to be like, we're going to kind of help protect him. Doesn't need to be around for all this, because, you know, one of the most heart-wrenching things was not post prequel era, but that convention footage of one person just asking him horrible questions and Jake always seeming to be a little angry and tired of it all, because yeah, why wouldn't you be? And he was still trying to go out there, you know, still trying to be part of it. And I think that interview was shared a lot differently. I forget the year it popped up, but you know the one I'm talking about, right? That it just was like, it was really like everyone kind of was still treating him a little wrong, I thought, in the response to the interview. But now that wouldn't be how that interview would be received, right? It'd be a little bit more on the reporter or the person asking questions that we'd be upset at. So anyways, all this to say, before I really even truly get into it, is I want it in the worst way, but it has to come from Jake.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it for me of, I want whatever is best for the human being, Jake Lloyd. Mm-hmm. If he was in the right place and he wanted to appear at a convention, great. Mm-hmm. Then that would be great. But it for me, it is all about what is best for this human being, because this human being was treated horribly, mm-hmm. As a human being, of the amount of people not being able to separate the art from the artist, particularly when it's a child, mm-hmm. At the time. And that's no excuse, right? It happened again when he was an adult, that same, just the step far beyond this performance didn't work for me, this film didn't work for me, to just dunking on a human being, mm-hmm. for cheap laughs and at the time, mm-hmm. in social media retweets when he got into some of his problems. So it's got to be about the human being. And I think I'm trying to find the exact right words for it. Mm-hmm. When somebody asks me, do I want it? Me? Yes, I want it, but I don't want it to be about me. Mm-hmm. I would feel healing for myself, for the Star Wars community, if Jake Lloyd made a triumphant return. Mm-hmm. But it can't be about me or what I want or what's best for the Star Wars community. It needs to be about first what is best for this human being. Yeah. So yes, I want it, but this massive caveat of, I don't want to really put it this way. Like, I don't want to start a petition because maybe this man doesn't want it. I don't want him to feel pressured. I want him to just have the best life possible. And coming back to Star Wars in any way adds to him having the best life possible, then I want that. But my own sort of selfish desire to see that healing is secondary to what this human needs.
Yeah. And one of the things that it would, the battle in a way could still go on. He could pop up at Star Wars Celebration 2025 in Tokyo, and without a doubt would the building would shake with applause. I do not doubt that for a second. But that doesn't mean the general landscape is completely improved. There's been times where Ahmed, who's now, you know, been out in front, even before Mandalorian, Jedi Temple Talent Challenge mentioned it, that great interview he did, the one that was very open with our pal Jamie Stangrum, really put it back out there, really front and center what he went through and the near taking of his own life. Even after that, you see him sometimes have to deal with Jar Jar is stupid, most hated character ever. And he's been responding with such grace, but also fighting back in a way. One of his comments, I remember I seen on Instagram of like, see right there what you said, you know, the most hated character ever. Like, why is that even part of this conversation? Right.
Yeah. So
that would be something to consider too is, you know, Jake's not on social media, all this stuff, but like it would still, so is it even how much value is that? You get a big endorphin rush. There's probably some emotions. You know, we saw Hayden crying at Celebration, right? Because mm-hmm. you know, he didn't go through it as much, but he went through some of that time, some of that stuff too. To feel that, you felt that emotion from him. It would be great, but yeah, then is it still worth it? Would be the question. So these, and they, you know, this is something we can't answer. We can only wonder. But yeah, man, I want to be there if that happens.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think. I did more looking into the story of Jake Lloyd than I have mm-hmm. in previous times, and I think there's some things about the timeline of his relationship with Star Wars that have maybe gotten a little bit of twisted in just sort of popular knowledge, mm-hmm. popular imagination.
Right.
He did conventions mm-hmm. up to 2014.
Right.
He gave some quote in around 2011, 2012 about, you know, wanting to be done with Star Wars. And those things really, really got promoted. But if you look at it, some of them are like the tabloids from Britain that really promoted that. He continued to be engaged going to conventions. If you go on YouTube and search, you can find interviews with him, friendly interviews where he's happy and joking mm-hmm. and discussing Star Wars. I didn't watch them all because I was doing this research this morning and I didn't have mm-hmm. time, but there are good solid YouTube interviews with Jake Lloyd as an adult. He'd move on from acting, but he was still at Star Wars conventions. He was working as a film editor. Mm-hmm. I found his actual Facebook page, just Jake mm-hmm. Lloyd's Facebook page. One of the last posts is that there's an interview he did in 2014 mm-hmm. where he's December of 2014, where he's still talking about Star Wars and reacting to the episode 7 trailer. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get a chance to listen. I don't know what the tone of that interview is, but he posted, mm-hmm. This is a really great interview. This is a really great talk. So as late as 2014, he was still engaging. He was done acting. But he was still talking and engaging with Star Wars. And then traffic incident, the chase, the arrest happens in 2015. His family gives some reports. And the most recent thing I found is from his mother as recently as 2020, mm-hmm. Saying that he was diagnosed with a form of schizophrenia and that he was deeply affected by the death of a sibling.
Mm-hmm.
That he's not in a facility right now, that he is living close to his family and working on his health. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think I wanted to lay that out because some of that stuff I didn't know. I had the picture that he kind of walked away.
Yeah, right.
I knew he stopped acting, but I didn't know as recently as 2014 he was engaging with Star Wars and that he was giving interviews where he talked about Star Wars, but also talked about what else he was working on and why. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I have no reason not to doubt what his family says, but that is also just like the only point of reference we have. You know, the human himself hasn't made any proclamations in a while. So I think it made me happy to see some later interviews with him as an adult sharing his experiences. And I just deeply hope that he is happy. Because he deserves that after everything that he went through, both as a child and in 2015. And I think that was the other thing for me to just, I think social media and the Star Wars community and the pop culture community has evolved a lot even since 2015. It's not, it's getting to be a while ago now. But I remember when he was arrested and there was the mugshot.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had to make their joke of now this is pod racing. And you know what? If this was a fictional character, that'd be a funny joke. It's a funny contrast to have, you know, a young child who's into racing and then have some hard times in life. Like, great. I understand the instinct, but the fact that the level of cruelty toward a human suffering hadn't changed since 1999 to 2015 really affects me. You know, I'm not a saint. I've made some jokes on social media I'd probably take back. I think I used to see Hollywood as more it's Hollywood. Everyone there is powerful, so they can take a little ribbing. Living here, knowing every person who ever touches anything is a human being, I think has made me look at it differently. But I just wanted to share and get your response. I'm affected by the cruelty that was inflicted on Ahmed Best in 1999 on Jake Lloyd, a child who is an actor who should not have had that, you know, put on him. But it didn't change any by 2015.
It's
really frustrating and upsetting. And I think it would be different today. And I really hope it would be different today.
In some circles, it absolutely would. I think there'd still be an area of struggle, right? And going to back to what I was saying, but also I love that update too. I've familiar with some of it, but even some of those interviews you're talking about, I haven't heard. I want to go seek those out. And things have changed, and maybe that, I think maybe that's part of my hunger to see him come back, so to speak, in what I feel is a different era led by a different generation of Star Wars fans. The prequel generation has probably a different appreciation for him. And as the conversation changes, by the time this is released, you'll have seen Return of the Jedi in theaters again, so to speak, when we release. Talking to our pals, we often do. We mention him a lot. Our buddy Ken Plume, Force 5, check him out. He went to Return of the Jedi screening and told me, he goes, it's so weird to, in a good way, he meant it, like, the stuff that we used to scream about, or our generation, or the pop culture punditry that was dominated, that the conversation was dominated by prequel hate, or, you know, that kind of the special edition hate. I was in the screening and people cheered when Hayden showed up. People liked Jedi Rocks, and the generation has changed. I'm just talking about in Star Wars. So I think now this could a path to Jake being brought back to this era, just as a person who comes out on a stage and waves, even doesn't need to necessarily appear in a show, begins with a reevaluation of what he did bring to that role. And for every wizard or yippee that you don't like, there's some real wonderful simmering anger of Anakin. There's some real warm moments that build this character and continue to form the structure for this character who goes on this powerful, iconic redemption arc, right? Humps from him. So if we start having those conversations and start appreciating those kind of things, it could lead to a better reception beyond even just, hey, that's the guy. Because I think that's part of it with Ahmed too, where I know Jar Jar's not going to be favorites for a lot of people, but you start to get what he means. Jennifer, we talk about the why of Jar Jar. Chuck Wendig writes that wonderful aftermath piece. That all becomes powerful and beyond just, oh, cool that Ahmed's out. It's like now there's meaning behind the character for us. Or now we're understanding other people's perspectives. I think that has changed. I do worry about the comedy aspect of it. I've talked about often. I'm with you too. There's not a lot I feel I need to go back and take down from my social media pages, but there's a lot of things that I just wouldn't say anymore because my intentions are not aligned with that anymore. Words matter. Jokes matter. I a lot of people even listening now know me from the Schmoes Know movie news that I used to do, which was very snarky and very fun. And I sometimes miss doing it, but there was a specific moment where I made it was a very funny in the time. People still talk about it. I made a joke about Brendan Fraser. And the joke was essentially kind of a has-been joke, right? And got big laughs on the show. And it was perfectly timed. Oh, it was, as a performer, it was just one of my favorite moments. Then it comes out years later. his career was affected by sexual assault. His career was affected by trying to speak out about that, but couldn't. And now we got this wonderful comeback story right now. And it seems all great now, to your point of, hey, yeah, now he's all good now. He's got an Oscar. I didn't know that at the time. And when that was revealed, I had so much shame for what I said. So much shame for I just tossed those words into the ether because to me, they had no meaning. And I think that's what was going on with Jake. And you're right. It is as late as 2015 or beyond. And I bet there'd be still be some people make those jokes now. So I think that's part of it too. If you're, if he's, he or his family's measuring, do we even want to do this? I think it's fair to say, you know, it still might be a problem, but I hope it isn't. But I think you're right. It's changed, and different generations are leading the conversations now. Thank God.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I can only hopefully be invited to the party still. but I think it's more right than it was then.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you said a lot of really great things. I think, for me, going back to just the core of it's about what he wants, he's pretty clear about in some of those interviews about, hey, happy to do the interview, but I want to work behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Now that's where I want to be. So, you know, if he is feeling warm about Star Wars and in, you know, the greatest possible place, mental, physical health, it might just be like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to walk in front of 1,000, 2,000 people, even if they're going to applaud me. It's not what I want. So that's always the most important thing to me. I think everything you're saying really makes sense to me too about just really deciding the targets of comedy. We've talked about it plenty, but it's really a decision. You know, it's about the. The punch up, punch down is a really great direct way to say it. And I think maybe that's it. I think maybe people just kind of feel like, well, Brendan Fraser's, hey, the guy from The Mummy, yeah, that extremely handsome, wealthy man. Oh, how can I hurt him? Right.
Yeah.
And it's more complicated than that. And I think that's really important. And final thing for me, I also love what you're saying about is a complex question just about the performance in Phantom Menace, because if it doesn't work for you, the first thing is don't attack a child.
The bare minimum.
Bare minimum, first thing. But then there's actually like, yeah, oh, I love the prequels so much, but some of the dialogue throughout all the films comes off stiff and wooden to me. And sometimes it really works. And other times there's those moments where like this moment sings for me and it would sing even more if Lucas was more in the mood to talk to his actors.
Yeah.
And work a beat. I feel that way even as being a diehard fan of all the prequels. And there might be some moments like that in Jake Lloyd's performance, but I truly think there's some phenomenal moments where you see Anakin, you see Luke, you see Ben, Solo, Kylo Ren coming down the line, the sadness, the conflict, the intensity. There's so much of Anakin, of the Skywalker lineage, that I think is right there on screen and in a great performance.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that simmer in anger. I mean, he nailed it. And the warmth. I'm sorry, I don't want to repeat myself, but the stuff with Shmi is just beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that spirit is present in the throne room in Return of the Jedi. That's the spirit that returns. It's a spirit he helps establish.
Yeah. No, absolutely. The "Will I ever see you again" is heartbreaking. Yeah. Which seems like perhaps a good moment to end on. I think we would love to see Jake Lloyd again. We wish him the best and hope that someday he would want to see us, the Star Wars fans, again. Any final thoughts, Ken?
No, put a pin in it because I hope to one day discuss this again if we do see him again. But if we never do, I thank him for his contributions to the saga I love so much.
Yeah. And if you're interested in it, like I said, there are more and later interviews than I thought there were available. And I look forward to watching them in more detail. With that, we are going to take a quick break and we'll be back with our cues from patrons on Patreon back in a moment.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we are back for two more cues. These next two come to us from our patrons on Patreon. Our first question comes from someone that we did get to meet at Star Wars Celebration in London, Ilka. I'm going to attempt to say Ilka's last name. Ilka did tell me how to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. When we met, I should have got out a notebook and wrote it down phonetically because that's what I need for myself. Mm-hmm. Ilka Padikongas. That is my attempt. I'm sure it is not entirely correct. Fun, quick story for this. I was like, I'm gonna look it up. I'm gonna see if I can find a guide. And I found a SoundCloud. I typed Ilka's last name and pronunciation. And I found a SoundCloud from Ilka about how to pronounce his name, but it was just his first name. And I was like, I think I have that. I think I'm pretty good with that. I think I'm close. I'm close. Maybe I don't have it. Ilka. Maybe I don't have it. But it was funny. Ilka, it was so wonderful to meet you. And we continue to go on a journey of trying to get closer and better on the pronunciation of all of our listeners' names. We so appreciate meeting you and appreciate the great questions you ask like this one. Ken, do you have anything to add to the pronunciation journey before I move on?
Look, our American tongues, I always say, can only go so far, and we're trying, and I think it's part of the fun, but Ilka and Mark and Greer and Andrew McNabb, the four of them we've talked about, it was just such a highlight of Star Celebration to not for our involvement with it, but them forming a connection, them meeting on Discord first and in person here, and just the joy they brought to the convention was a highlight for me.
Yeah,
Absolutely. So here's what Ilka has to say. Hello, friends. I think one of the most interesting things about a new Jedi Order is going to be the philosophy of the Jedi. The prequels painted the Jedi Order as a flawed and fallible organization, and Rian Johnson's The Last Jedi explored some of those ideas. But the direction of the new Jedi under Rey is still unclear. For example, will attachment and romantic partners still be forbidden? Will Rey take Force-sensitive children from their families, or will the Order be formed in some other way? What other new things or rules might there be? I'd be curious to hear your thoughts or guesses on this matter. Cheers. Cheers to you. This is great. This is, we keep talking about this new Jedi Order film, and we talk about the rumors about it. We talk about the business about it. We've talked about the, what is Rey's journey? Is she going to be a main character who goes through a big change, a big arc, or will she be a steadfast mentor? We haven't had the time to get into what is, in to me, some of the most exciting questions that are being asked here. So I'm thrilled with this question. Ken, where do you go with these ideas?
We talk about generational change and our place in it as Star Wars fans and podcasters. This might be one that brings up one of the most old guy vibes I have. So bear with me, folks. There is a wonderful sense of momentum out there of all generations, but younger ones in particular that are questioning and at times tearing down the structures of the past, right? Mm-hmm. And analyzing it and asking more, well, what does this mean? And why did we follow that rule? And what is that for? And who's it hurting? And I'm there for that. It's fascinating stuff. It's definitely just rearranged how I look at things and look at the past and look at things I was a part of or said or did or what I want to do going forward. So I'm there for all that kind of stuff. But a lot of times when it comes to the Jedi, you have the wonderful Justice for Jedi philosophy that leads us through a lot of our conversations here. I sometimes I'm like, and by the way, not saying that Ilka is suggesting this at all, but I think sometimes the conversations are around this tend to put Jedi in the bad light, tend to want to tear everything down. And I'm always like pumping the brakes going, but just remember the intentions. Mm-hmm. And I still think there needs to be some sort of rules for you to be a Jedi. I'm not for less rules. I'm just for more clearer rules. And I'm for, the room to grow, change, and challenge as Jedi, which might not have been there at the end of the Order, which was part of Lucas's point. We always go to the union, the Director Guild thing, where unions weren't the problem, but what you were doing as union at the time was the problem because it wasn't your true or original intentions. And so I always come on that side. And so this question, I was just like, I want to get a little grumpy and almost get in my car and go, no, there's got to be rules. There should be rules on attachment. No romantic partners. And I personally think you still do have to recruit somehow. But I get the feeling that Rey's mind and heart would be very focused on, an Ahsoka-like quality, because that's where Ahsoka kind of is in a lot of her adventures. We will see what the series brings us. But even at the end of the Clone Wars, we're just, hey, if we're Jedi, we're here to help. We're here to look for places to help. And how we help is just important as going out and trying to help. Like, how do we approach this? The why behind it? And that just feels like the direction Rey would be going. Especially for someone, and this is about the attachment and or even just directly romantic partner side of it, if that's what Rey wanted. For someone who finally gets to go live a life, right? She's finally out and about in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would want her to right away be like, all right, I got 15 rules from Ghost Uncle Luke. And, you know, I don't know what her life was on Jakku. I'm not saying she just spent every night in that AT house by herself. I don't know. She hopefully had got experience a lot of different things on that island. But you just get a sense from Force Awakens on that she's the green, the rainwater. Passana, that's why you, me, and so many other people love the moments with her on Passana, because this is why we're fighting. This is what we're fighting for, life, joy, the future, generations, just a warm day in the sun. I really think Rey is experiencing that more and more throughout the sequel trilogy, and there's purpose behind that. So I don't want her to ignite that yellow lightsaber and be like, all right, here's 15 rules. But I do think if she's building the Order, there has to be some sort of structure. Has to be some sort of way to look at it. And I don't know if it goes too far past what was already there, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I think everything you're saying makes a ton of sense to me. I think it'll be interesting to have the new Jedi Order, Rey's new Jedi Order, if that is indeed the 2025 film coming out. I do think that Filoni has started, and Favreau, but Filoni's been writing these episodes of, hey, we got to see Luke's school get started. The idea that Grogu is going to be the first student, the great ant robots building the huts, that there is some interest in seeing how Luke really approached it as trying to restore an order that maybe as he started, he was like, well, a good thing was lost. And maybe he didn't fully have the frame of reference of the organization got encrusted, got fearful, got rigid, lost some of the spirit of the rules and only focused on the letter of the rules.
Yeah.
And that he is sort of recreating that order. There could be a really interesting, not to paint Luke as the failure and Rey as the success at all, because I don't see that. But to see kind of two different attempts to rebuild the order right next to each other could be very interesting.
Right.
Going back to just Rey, I really hope some of these ideas are explored. But right now, I think it's responsible speculation because it is taking the words of the confirmed director, Sharmeen Obed-Chinoy, who has said, this is a film inspired by the work I've done, the documentary films I've made, where I have met real life people who have overcome massive obstacles to fight for justice in situations where justice is clearly needed to push back against horrible, crushing oppression. And that's what this is inspired by. That to me makes it sound like this is a film that's going to have a perspective of the Jedi are needed. They are good. They are symbols of light and hope, and they fight the darkness. I think that this film might not be as much like the prequels as a, or The Last Jedi that are a questioning of, yep, the order is good, but what are the missteps? But more the, yep, the order is good. And look at the other options, the darkness. I'm excited, speculating, hopefully responsibly, that it is more of a justice for the Jedi story. So I start from that point. I did see I can't even remember where it was because I was in a TikTok. It was some red carpet type thing during Star Wars Celebration where Kathleen Kennedy was asked about the film. And Kathleen Kennedy had an offhand quote about, well, like, you know, Rey's got those Jedi books and she's been learning from them. And who knows if that's an off the cuff thing or if that's actually a part of the discussion and the story development. But I really like this idea that Rey has picked up from Luke some of the doubts, some of the missteps, some of Luke's particular lesson of ego in hubris and overconfidence and holding on too tight and trying to make everything perfect. Those are some lessons that she got directly from Luke. Well, she saw herself the absolute core need for, yep, those are all things to be wrestled with. But at the end of the day, if someone is being hurt, if someone is being victimized, bullied, somebody else has to stand in and stop that. And that's the Jedi period. So I'm curious if that's really if that's a part of the story, that those books are the core ideas. Those are ancient, right? So is the idea from those books that power is a responsibility? As a Jedi, you connect with the Force. You have power. It's your responsibility to use that to help others. That's the core decision. Now, everything after that gets complicated, nuanced, situation by situation. Am I overstepping? Am I taking somebody else's agency away? Is this something that really needs my intervention? And am I falling into fears about my own, you know, powers or all those things? It gets complicated after that, but it starts pure. Power is responsibility and it should be used to help other people. And I'm really fascinated to see if that's this perspective of the film, that Rey has been going on a journey for herself, getting her, maybe training Finn, maybe training a couple other people, maybe being kind of nomadic, really has her feet under her. And 15 years later, now she's like, got it. I'll formalize it. I'll start in order. Then what Ilka's talking about really comes in of like, what were the rules of the past? How do we bring them into the future? And when I think about it, I get excited about how much of Rey's story is going to be continued. How does she feel about attachment given her life journey? A huge amount of her journey in the sequel trilogy is she wants family.
Yeah,
she knows the value of connection. What she needed to be strong enough herself to stand up and stop Palpatine was reaching out and feeling connected to all the Jedi who have come before and hear those words of encouragement. She needed to find out what this connection with Ben is. She's part of a dyad. She adopted a family name. Her relationship with Finn gave her great strength. So I feel like this is a character who would maybe be more even-handed about attachment, of knowing how important it is, that love is needed, connection is needed, family is needed. And to me, the core thing is, but you got to be able to let them go. You can't lash out in vengeance because something bad happens to them. If you are needed as a Jedi somewhere else and you need to leave your loved ones for a while, you need to be able to leave them, even in the short term. That, to me, is the heart of the rule. And I think the thing that Lucas really believes in. And then there's a question of, when does it get too rigid? So I'd love to see that be reckoned with, of like, have all the connection you want, but you need to be able to prove to yourself that you can let them go.
Yeah, might be the big one. Yeah, because connection and belonging was such a part of her journey, but as she learned a lot of things along the way. I love you said stuff earlier about direct lessons directly learned from Luke, including maybe lessons of failure on some of the Luke's decisions, right? She'd have a lot to say about Jedi not just being a symbol of hope, but the why of it, right? And I go to the, I'm going to take a laser sword and run out there and destroy everybody. I'm not doing that, Rey. And then he does his version of it. That's got to be what leaves a lasting impression on, which will lead to what you're talking about of what are we in this galaxy? What do we represent? What do we want to represent versus some of the past failures? It's a good starting point if she's doing the Book of Rey, page one.
Yeah. I love that. And I feel like that's, as the years have gone on, has become one of my favorite parts of The Last Jedi, of Luke is saying a truth that the Force is this cosmic, eternal thing, and Jedi tap into it. It's not a superpower. It's a cosmic truth. And he kind of makes that point by saying it's not about lifting rocks. But when Rey has that fun line of lifting rocks, it's a reminder that her physical power saves the lives of everyone there. And that physical power matters. It's a responsibility. And I think that's driven home in Rise of Skywalker too, when Poe is frustrated, like, you're just training away. We need you out there. Your physical abilities, your connection to this Force allows you to do things that other people can't do. And we need that now. So to see if she's really stayed connected to that real practical, our abilities do make a difference and they're needed out there, and we can't ever lose sight of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And being connected to the bigger picture, and the thought of the attachment side of it too, of just like, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but a little of the stuff I play at Rise of Skywalker is her just afraid of who she is. We know that, afraid of who she really, really, really is, and really, really who she really can be. But that blocks her off from the Jedi from the past. It's almost like a weird, attachment to self is one of the ways I took it. Right. I feel like I want to work with them. I want to keep the spirit going, but I gotta do this by myself. And releasing herself from that and hearing those voices and connecting to her friends and connecting to Finn and Poe and Rey and 3PO even, and Babu even, was part of that journey too. That might be a different way to look at it going forward. But yeah, but knowing that you're lifting those rocks, the why of the lifting the rocks is important.
The why of lifting the rocks, and then just, hey, not everybody can lift rocks with their minds, and that does actually matter.
Yeah.
I think it's along with Luke's great philosophical truth that it is not just an X button on a video game. It is more than that, but it is also that.
There's something in that that makes me think of what I was saying up top of just when I say I think there needs to be some sort of rules. All I really maybe mean is there being a Jedi is a higher calling. And though you can train and like Lucas once said, y'all can play basketball, but some people just got skills more than you, you know, and you have to practice more to keep up. That's why. And by the way, I'm doing a lot of assuming that, and that's what I'm trying to remind myself of just like, don't toss it all out because it should be a little tougher to follow. It should be a serious mind is required, right? All that stuff Yoda kind of said, that not everyone can just be like, I feel the force. I got a lightsaber. Let's go kick ass. And, you know, it needs to be, you know, a little, I guess, special, but you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Lucas has you know, said how important training is, that's a part of the Jedi lesson of these are, some people are more strongly attached, but they still have to study baseball. Or basketball, in his analogy. It's not like, and Filoni's brought that up again and again about how that's one of the things that Lucas really imparted on him. If you're telling stories about Force users, they need to train. And I know people think Rey doesn't have enough training. And she trains with a year for with Leia for Rise of Skywalker. And anyway, don't go down that Rey rabbit hole. Yeah. I think your training is there. Other thing for me about her life journey and what she learned in the sequels, and I'm interested to see how that would filter into an order where she made rules. I think a lot of these things for Lucas, they're not inherently bad. The attachment rule isn't inherently bad. The the going and finding children at a young age when they're open-minded and they're not getting attached to a previous life, I don't think that's a bad thing to him. I think he has stories where he questions them or questions corruption of them, but they're not inherently bad to Lucas is the way I took it. I know in the real world, some people feel like, you know, a space wizard taking your baby.
Yeah.
Not even good. With permission. There's plenty of Star Wars storytelling that wrestles with that. But for Rey, what's interesting to me about that is she knows what it's like to desperately need guidance. Mm-hmm. Look at that speech she gives to Luke in The Last Jedi of like, something's been there. It's always been there. But now it's awake, and I don't know what it is or what to do with it. I feel like Rey as a character is like never, if it's in her power to stop somebody else going through that, that's what she wants. So I'm really curious about, is the beginning of her journey, hey, I bet there are people out there who are having an awakening, and they don't know what it is or why, and I want to be there for them to give them the guidance that I so desperately needed. Then 15 years into that, how does she formalize it?
Yeah.
Of never wanting anyone to go through the pain of what she did, of desperately needing guidance and not initially getting it.
Yeah. Being rejected by it or hurt by it. Yeah.
Yeah. Still, I'm very excited. Very, very excited.
Oh, there's a lot there. A lot there.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that question. Some of my favorite kind of Star Wars stuff to talk about. Any final thoughts before we move on, Ken?
Well, my only final thought is hopefully we find out in 2025.
Just a few short years. Yeah. I had to do math in my head. We're going to go on to our final question from Justin Jacobson. This is a fun one. Justin says, hello there, Ken and Joseph. I'm curious about something that calls for some speculation, so please be as irresponsible as you deem appropriate. We've seen rebel uprisings, Ewok bachelor parties, and Gungan get-togethers, but have not witnessed much of the old ways of Mandalore. What do you think Mandalorian celebrations are like? Is it a somber prayer of thanks to the ancestors before they go off to eat by themselves? Or do they play loud music and mosh like metalhead so half the planet can hear their armor clanking? I feel like Justin submitted this before the last couple episodes of The Mandalorian, where you know we saw them at the Foundry relighting ceremony, and there was some clanging and clanking. So, Ken, where do you go with this? How do ancient Mandalorians party?
Well, okay, so you and I grew up in the 70s and 80s, Joseph, where Tupperware parties were a thing. and did a few of those in my day. I think the Mandalorians have training parties. That's what they have. I think you saw a glimpse of it on Dinosaur Attack River, caves there, where that episode that begins with all the training. That's kind of how the partying went down. Now, I do agree with you that what we saw at the Great Forge is also probably part of it. So I think, actually, Justin, what you're suggesting I think there's a mix of the two ways. There's like, let's have a somber moment of reflection and we all go eat our chips and salsa by ourselves. And you come back here for the fighting. Everyone come back in. We'll have some ritual fighting. And I don't think, you know, I'm a little bit joking a little bit, but I don't think that's far from what would be the truth for me.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think that, you know, based on the Mandalorians applause system of bashing their Beskar Vambraces together, which we saw when Ragnar was rescued and then when the Great Forge was relit, that feels very traditional and very, very loud. You know, and we also did see that they've got drums in the ceremony.
That's true.
That we see on Dinosaur River Island planet. So, and we did see kind of an awkward meal, right? They called for the feast, and the side that takes their helmets off, we're eating while being stared at by the side that doesn't take their helmets off. So I think it is a kind of a massive, like almost in real world traditions, midwinter festival carnival depending on the helmet rules. I think there are probably some competitions that get a little, maybe it's meant to just be like a flamethrower competition, but maybe it gets a little feisty. Yeah. Maybe there are organized knife fights. I think that there are traditional Mandalorian drinks that we haven't heard about, like very high IBV, ABV, alcohol, like a drink called like Blood of the Mythosaur, things like that. Some ancient, heavy drinks. I think there's probably some group screaming rituals where they all just scream for Mandalore.
Yeah. Just for Mandalore's sake.
Yeah.
There's some little, little like pigs in a blanket called Rockets of the D.
Yep. I think it's a big, loud party myself.
Yeah. More gregarious than maybe you'd think. The whole group. Yeah.
It's one of the fun things that we still don't know because Children of the Watch, you know, claim to be following the old ways, and they seem to have extremely detailed rules. We joked about, you know, I love the, well, when you're in a hunting party and you all have to go off to different places to take your helmet off and eat alone, the leader of the hunting party gets to stay by the fire. Like, that's some serious pedantic level of rules. So I feel like they might have a long list of exactly how the party goes.
Yeah, exactly.
And at exactly 3 hours into the party, somebody says this poem.
Yeah. I do think all of this started to change, and maybe there was a breaking point when at one point, maybe on Mandalore, Sundari City, there was a party and someone's like, you know what? Nuts to this. Everyone take your helmets off. And those that did went that way, and then the others went the old way.
Oh, I like that the helmets got taken off because the party just got too wild. Yep. Too wild.
Yep.
Love it. A very fun question. That is it for our cues, but we do have a Power of the Light Side segment. If you're a patron on Patreon, we put out this call for submissions. Just look for the posts page and scroll down to the picture of Obi-Wan Kenobi smiling at the Skywalker twins and let us know your entry of just something in Star Wars that makes you feel happy. Here is an entry today from James Pasqualucci. James says, hello there, Force Center. For my Power of the Light Side, I wanted to celebrate a piece of Star Wars that has great significance to me, the Clone Wars Season 1 trailer. I never dreamed we would get anything beyond the original 6 films, but I always wondered if there could be more to this galaxy I cherished. I did learn about Legends, but I just did not gravitate to it, so I just put it out of my mind. I was more than satisfied with these wonderful 6 movies, but then I discovered something. The Clone Wars movie. That is how I learned about the Clone Wars. I watched the movie and fell in love with it. However, I did not watch the TV show immediately, probably because I was 9 to 10 and still figuring out how the heck TV worked. But for years, I would continue to watch the movie. Before the menu came on, the Season 1 trailer played and it captivated me.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it was a symbol of this galaxy existing beyond the films. I was fascinated by some of Yoda's lines like, in this war, a danger there is of losing who we are. Or rush not into fights. Long is the war, only by surviving it will you prevail.
I love the banter between Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka. I was thrilled to actually see Dooku and Grievous talking together and thinking what Dooku meant to, by saying there was an ongoing stalemate in the war. I was terrified to see Ventress looming over Luminara and saying that all Jedi must fall. Eventually, I did get to the Clone Wars, and it wasn't long after that the new continuity was established. Now, all these years later, I go back to this trailer. Star Wars has expanded beyond my wildest dreams, beyond this original footage I obsessed over. But it all started with this trailer. I go back to it to remember what I was dreaming of. And now with more movies, TV shows, books, and more than I know what to do with more moments that have moved me than I could have ever thought, with so much more coming. After seeing that expanded timeline from Celebration 2023, I smile that the last line of this trailer I loved came true. Their galaxy isn't far, far away anymore. Thanks for letting me share this. I put the link to the trailer below if you'd like to watch it. James, I did like to watch it. I watched it and I liked it. Yeah, it was so great. That trailer was phenomenal. Share a couple more thoughts, but Ken, I want to get you in here for your thoughts.
This is why we talk about entry points and generational viewpoints and perspectives. And while, you know, it might be a quick laugh to make a joke about the Clone Wars movie or even early Clone Wars or the Clone Wars series overall, which I still have every now and then. But man, that might be your journey, but that does not guarantee that it ever is everyone else's journey. And James, this is a powerful story. And I love, you and I talk often, and you mentioned recently made a great joke about just having like one thing on VHS that you had to watch over and over and over until it wore down because that's all you had, right? Mm-hmm. From that sprung so many questions and what ifs and imaginary scenarios, fan fiction in your own heart, everything about just imagining what came after this or what it would mean. And a lot of it came from just trailers or a behind the scenes special. And this is an example of that for you, James, and a wonderful share.
Yeah, absolutely. I went on such a journey with the Clone Wars myself, and mm-hmm. some of that journey mm-hmm. was totally about entry points to Star Wars and expectations. And for myself, just not having enough imagination or patience to see where the story goes. I saw the movie and I enjoyed parts of it, but I was challenged by it. And then I wasn't 9 to 10 years old, but I couldn't afford cable. So I didn't have access to it. And people kept telling me over the years, it gets better. It gets so good. It gets so good. And now I love that movie because it's the beginning of the journey and I can see the intent. So Clone Wars has just been one of my greatest journeys in Star Wars, from having my walls up to continuing to be one of my favorite parts of Star Wars. When I watched an episode of Clone Wars, it was just like, this is for me, prime Star Wars. Here we are. Let's go. This is great. So I'm sure I saw this trailer back in the day, and I'm sure parts of it I was excited by, and I'm sure other parts it's like, Didn't we just go through this with Anakin and in the dark side? What are we doing here? I think I would have had some of those walls up when I originally watched it. It's such a gift to see it again with now my own love of the Clone Wars and being like, yeah, that's Yoda's great speech from Ambush, the first episode, you know. That's the Malevolence arc, and like know all the beats and be excited about them. There's that fresh perspective. But more than anything, it's a gift to watch this from James's perspective, in knowing that this was that thing on a VHS or a DVD that fired his imagination, and to see it through that perspective and imagine what if that's all you knew about the Clone Wars. Yeah. It's so exciting to watch it from that perspective. So thank you for that gift, James.
That's amazing. Yep.
What is this? Wow.
What is this? And what a great sentiment. I did not remember that their galaxy isn't far, far away anymore. That is becoming more and more true, as James said. So,
yeah,
absolutely great stuff. Any final thoughts, Ken?
No, love these shares. This is why we do it. You all make it so fun to hear your own journeys, which often sync up with ours, but sometimes are completely different. And that's what I love.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes they're even the same spread out over the mists of time and age. Yeah. So, yeah. Great Power of the Light Side. Great cues, everyone. Thank you so much. That is it. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Subscribe over there to get some of our content that is playing there, like Figure Fights. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on a lot of different spots, including iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And as we said up top, you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Catnapsock or go to my website, catnapsock.com, for more. Where can they follow you, sir?
You can find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Mastodon, Spout Hub. I don't know. I'm not on that one yet. I'm waiting for an invite to Blue Sky so I can join that and have everybody be excited and then have everybody leave that in 3 months. Anyway. Instagram's real solid. I'm not going anywhere from Instagram, so find me there. Find my YouTube. My handle is at Joseph Scrimshaw on everything, or YouTube, just search for Joseph Scrimshaw. But that is it for now, for myself, for Ken, for the imminent return of Talon Card. Maybe this has been Q's of the Force.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.